Well, it's wonderful to see everyone this morning. One of my great joys at the moment is watching the rerun of the series, the original series of Batman. It's so great watching it, particularly watching when Bruce Wayne is on the phone to Commissioner Gordon, who's completely clueless about the Caped Crusader's identity. Kind of reminds me of some of the things we've been hearing this morning. This idea of the secret identity, that the hero's true self is hidden from sight by an ordinarily outward appearance, you know, which is just a disguise, you know, as if Jesus needs it so he can pop out for a latte and just not be disturbed by the crowds. It's so easy to think about the transfiguration in these terms, as though the main point is that it's God that's present, and that somehow this clay jar that Jesus wears around just isn't that important. But I think there's a lot more going on in this story than what we might see at first sight. Because I think the transfiguration highlights some of the things about Christian spirituality that are really important for us. All of these things are grounded in what did the disciples see? And what did the disciples hear? And the third really important question is, what are the disciples expected to do? So let's recap the story where we see Jesus taking his closest friends up onto the mountaintop where, quite unexpectedly, he's transformed. I wonder, what did the disciples see? They certainly saw Jesus' clothing changed, its appearance. The word for this is metamorphoon. This is the word we get from which we get metamorphosis. It's this kind of change or transformation that happens, like a caterpillar into a butterfly. We see Jesus and his clothes become just dazzling and bright and white, as though Jesus is some first century Clark Kent. But that's not all that the disciples saw. They saw Jesus standing alongside Moses and Elijah, the heroes of Israel. Wow, could you imagine what that would have been like to see? But what did the disciples hear? They heard God himself speak from the clouds. This is no ordinary moment, folks. This is they've joined an exclusive club. They're up there with Moses and Elijah, hearing the very voice of God himself. And what does this voice say? This is my son, the beloved. Or I think as the NIV puts it, this is the one I love. Whoa, can you imagine what that would have felt like to hear? But having seen this, having heard this, how were the disciples to respond? We certainly hear Peter kind of rummaging around for words, something sensible to say, when he's probably quaking on the inside. And this is where the voice tells them perhaps to do the hardest thing for any of us to do, namely, listen to him. The transfiguration is important because I think it helps us to see what Paul calls the glory and the lordship of Jesus. And it focuses our attention on some things that are really important. And I think what it also does is it highlights a number of distractions that we can take. If you think of the transfiguration as a bit like a highway, I think it highlights a number of distractions or off-ramps that we can so easily take when we are in this journey of getting to know God. So before we look at the main thing, let's look at some of the distractions that we as Christians can fall into. I think it highlights three big diversions or misunderstandings that we can have of the transfiguration. I think perhaps the first main diversion or misunderstanding we can have is what I might call the Bruce Wayne bypass. Just as Batman is only Bruce Wayne in tights, this pathway basically says, look, there's nothing special about Jesus at all. There's nothing glorious about him. This pathway is quite strong in the belief that miracles just aren't scientific, and therefore they can't happen and don't happen. And so all this story in particular is just a bunch of fake news made up by the church. From this angle, there's no treasure at all. There are just jars of clay. And so when there is nothing to see and nothing to hear, why bother walking up the mountaintop? Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, I think this is what he's talking about when he speaks of a veil. It's like people are just looking in the wrong direction, or they're just not bothering to look at all. See, on this road, transformation just isn't possible. The problems that we have in this world are just irresolvable. They just go on forever because people never change. But because this view never gets up to the mountain, it never understands what love is about. All that matters on the Bruce Wayne bypass is strength. And it says to people, look, don't get too close to this love stuff. Don't get into this Jesus malarkey. You'll only get hurt. The nice thing about the Bruce Wayne bypass is it expects people to do nothing. And so nothing in this world ever changes. I think there's a second way we can misunderstand the story of the Transfiguration. And I think that's by taking what I might call the Charlie Bucket Causeway. You remember Charlie Bucket? He's the kid in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. He's the guy who discovers the golden ticket and gets to visit the wonderful chocolate factory. What matters here spiritually is being a good boy like Charlie. I think this view of Jesus looks at him through the lens of Moses. It understands Jesus just through the lens of the law, and it says that spirituality is all about rule keeping, being the good boy, following God's instructions, staying on the right side of God's wrath, and you get the reward at the end of it. I think from this point of view, Jesus' transfiguration is understood in terms of authority. But when we understand the glory of Christ strictly in terms of authority, then we begin to hear God's words differently. It's as though God is saying something like, "This is my son, he's the boss." When Christians only see Jesus through the lens of Moses, when we only ever talk about his authority, then we certainly get transformed, don't we? So often we become filled with our own sense of certainty and authority and self-righteousness. It's as though somehow we know and understand everything in this world, and we feel compelled to tell everyone what to do and how to do it. In the end, listen to him becomes listen to me. But here's the thing with the Charlie Bucket Causeway. What happens if you're the gluttonous Augustus Gloop? What happens if you're the spoiled Veruca Salt or the arrogant Violet Beauregard? What happens? I think the best you can hope for is to get sucked up a pipe or carried away by squirrels. Because if you can't keep God's law, then there's no hope for you at all. I think the third diversion this story alerts us to is what I might call the Diana Prince Drive. Now, Diana Prince, if you know your comic books, is of course the secret identity of Wonder Woman. She is the powerful and no-nonsense weapon of truth and justice. I wonder if this is what happens when Christians begin to look at Jesus through the lens of Elijah. The prophet of power. He's the one who raises the dead. He's the one who just slays the priests of Baal. He is the butt-kicking prophet of Israel. And when we see Jesus through this lens of power, what happens? Well, we tend to see the glory of Jesus strictly in terms of his resurrection and his dominion. It's as though the disciples could only see God's power and supremacy. And again, I think what we hear God saying through this lens, it begins to shift, it begins to change, it begins to become something like this. This is my son, and he's in charge. When the glory of Christ focuses upon power, Christians develop this idea that we should always be winning. And our spirituality just seems to get supercharged. We consider ourselves to be the only light that rages against the darkness. We get so pumped to push against back all of God's enemies. Christians filled with this sense of power become just itching for a fight to prove how victorious they can be in the world. But what happens if you're weak or compromised? Well, so often you get treated by these Christians as though you're the weakest link, you're the problem in this world. Because clearly, if you're suffering affliction, if you're being crushed and persecuted, well, you're just doing this whole Christian thing wrong. I think they are very big diversions that many, many Christians take in this world. But I think the story of the Transfiguration draws our attention to something far deeper. If the glory that they saw in Jesus was not authority, nor was it power, what was it that they saw that day? I can't help but think that what they saw was nothing less than the Father's love for the Son. God's love is Christ's glory. God's love is what transforms the rags that he was wearing into these garments of praise. It's love that was so blinding and so dazzling and inspiring and so terrifying at the same time. It's this love that Yahweh shows from the very beginning in the Garden of Eden. It's this love that Moses saw on the mountaintop. It's this love that Elijah heard in the wind. It's this love that Isaiah saw in the temple. It's this love that the disciples see on the mountaintop. Think about it. There really isn't anything as powerful as love. It's the thing that can sweep aside every kind of division. It can heal any kind of wound. There's no authority like love because it's the only thing that's real. Just as darkness is the absence of light, violence and hatred and anger are simply the absence of love in the lives of people. We get these things when love gets extracted or taken away. But love is the thing that can stop violence. Love is the thing that can soothe hatred. Love is the thing that can quell anger. And so the disciples just can't believe their eyes. But then God says something very significant. This is my son, the one I love. It's as though God is speaking out of his very character, his very soul. It's not wrath that they see. That's not the defining characteristic of God. It is love, his love for the Son. And as they journey through Mark's gospel, what do they see unfold? It's not God's wrath. It is love. Love that reaches out to heal people. Love that reaches out to restore people. It's love that takes Jesus to the cross. And it's love that keeps him there. Only love can pierce our deepest darkness. It's only love that can work through the clay vessels that we are. This is why I think God urges the disciples to do one simple thing and one simple thing only, and that's to listen to him, to listen to love, to listen to the story, to listen to the love song that Jesus sings to us, a story that flows through us, restores us, renews us, changes us, transforms us, transfigures us, but only if we stop long enough to listen. This is why Paul can say he can be pushed in every direction and not break. This is why Paul can say he can go into bewildering situations and not lose hope, because it's only with love that he can endure suffering and sacrifice and pain and hurt and humiliation and disappointment, because he knows the depth and the breadth and the richness of God's love in his life. And that works for us too. Our journey begins by listening to God, by listening to Jesus, listening to the love story that he tells us. And when we listen, we begin to see things differently. Our clothes, our life, everything around us begins to change when love breaks in. We begin to see Jesus more clearly, and the world begins to change. And everything that we never think is possible, things like love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faithfulness and gentleness and self-control, these things start to grow everywhere in our lives. The glory that Paul and the disciples saw in the face of Jesus was neither power nor authority. It was love. So will you let love transform your life? Will you stop long enough to listen to this song that Jesus has for you? Will you come into God's presence just as you are and experience the transformation that he has? Because it all begins right now. Amen.